Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is back. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and a couple of different crazy martinis for you today as we're back for a short work week following the 4th of July Independence Day celebrations. Jim, welcome back from vacation, first of all.
It's good to be back. I almost forgot how we did this.
And of
course, do we have three martinis? Four? How many?
Today it's four. Usually it's three. And of course, most people don't realize this, but when we hit midnight between July 4th and July 5th, the music changes radically. Here's what it sounds like leading up to midnight on the 4th of July. Stars and Stripes Forever, all sorts of other patriotic music, but at least wherever Jim Garrity is, this is what the music sounds like after midnight. So, Jim, happy birthday. Welcome back. I hope you're tan, rested, and ready.
Oh, thank you, Greg. I want to thank everyone in America who chose to celebrate my birthday yesterday, day early. Never quite understood, but I've always appreciated that everyone gets really into the spirit of things and gets into it. Yeah, it's well, thank you for recognizing another day, another year of, you know, not dying.
Well, happy 39 again.
Thank you. Yeah, there you go. Yes, keeps going there. Keep the odometer's stuck.
All right, let's start with the good martini, of course. And for that, we go to Jim's writings in the Morning Jolt from earlier this week. And it's actually courtesy of the New York Times. Quote, while some of Mr. Trump's most ambitious plans to tighten the border are still a long way off, particularly his campaign pledge to build a massive wall, his hardline approach to immigration already seems to have led to sharp declines in the flow of migrants from Central America bound for the United States. From February through May, the number of undocumented immigrants stopped or caught along the southwest border of the United States fell 60% from the same period last year, according to United States Customs and Border Protection. Evidence that far fewer migrants are heading north, officials on both sides of the border say. Arrests of immigrants living illegally in the United States have soared, with the biggest increase coming among those migrants with no criminal records. And so, as you point out, Jim, migrant smugglers in Honduras are the ones who are seeing the business dry up here. You know, we always talk about the hard luck of the people trying to get here, and that certainly does engender some sympathy from time to time, depending upon the story. But the people who prey on these people are suffering, and that's always great. And, oh, by the way, our borders, just mere rhetoric, it would appear, in addition to competent work by the Border Patrol, is driving these numbers way, way down.
You know, this is good news, obviously, for the perspective of wanting to reduce illegal immigration, for wanting the idea of having an immigration policy that is enforced to kind of dispel this scofflaw attitude towards the nation's immigration laws. But also, I think it's worth noting, you know, people said that the Trump administration was going to destroy jobs. And to give credit where it's due, it has. It's destroying these people smuggling jobs. Human trafficking. Look, these were good-paying, black market, illegal, abusive positions that the Trump administration is removing. But you know, something else kind of worth examining of this is that for a long time, I think it was Noah Rothman and a couple of people in response to a piece he had written on the same topic. For a long time, we were told that reducing illegal immigration was just about impossible, that we could never enforce our way out of the problem, that this was xenophobic at heart to begin with. But even even if you wanted to, you couldn't do it. This is just the nature of the globalized world we live in. People are going to cross borders. Border enforcement is just about functionally impossible, and we just have to accept these things. And now it turns out, look, the border wall has not been built. Let's not fool ourselves. Enforcement is up, but we don't have perfect enforcement, but we don't really need perfect enforcement. Apparently, all we need is the perception that the U.S. president doesn't welcome illegal immigrants anymore. And then all of a sudden, there's a drastic reduction in the numbers coming across our border. This is good news. And this kind of you start wondering about how many other things are we told can't be fixed or just a reflection of the modern era. It's just the world we live in. Well, wait a second. Maybe we really can make big changes in this. Now, look, we shouldn't fool ourselves. It's not that illegal immigration has completely gone away. But I think most people who are concerned about this issue like seeing the numbers go down and go down pretty dramatically and seeing the people smugglers whining that their business has dried up. Oh, you poor guys. Now, do people in Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador deserve a better future? Absolutely. We ideally would help them get that better future in their own countries so they can live their happy dreams and build a better future for their families there and don't have to come here and work under the table and do have all the other deleterious effects that that come with illegal immigration. So, but yeah, again, for those who say, the failing New York Times, remember that trademark, Greg. It's not just the New York Times. It's the failing New York Times. That's right. Sad. Actually reported some good news for the Trump administration.
Fantastic. It's amazing what happens when you enforce the law and say you're going to enforce the law. People actually listen. Good to know. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And Jim, on Friday, Ian Tuttle and I talked about this story. And at that point, Illinois hadn't done much. And it was their last day, officially, before the end of the fiscal year, to actually do something to pass a budget that hadn't been done in the past 2 years at all in the administration of Governor Rauner. But it's mainly the Democrats in Springfield who control the legislature who simply want to keep raising taxes. And as we explained then, Illinois is getting to the point where they're running out of other people's money, and that's why people are leaving the state, and there's not much appetite for just massive new tax increases without major structural reforms to the pension system and other parts of the Illinois government. Well, it turns out they're going to try to keep sucking a lot more of other people's money into the coffers to just keep the system going as it is, because the demands for structural reform have not been met, and the Democrats look to be in position to override the vetoes of Governor Rauner, because in the last few days here, they've approved a $36 billion fiscal 2018 budget and a $5 billion tax increase package, which was passed by the House Sunday and Monday. Rauner vetoed these. The Senate has already overridden the veto. The House is going to vote on this either today or tomorrow. Looks like probably Thursday. They've got enough votes based on the initial vote to override the veto. They need 71. They got 73 over the weekend, and 15 of those votes, Jim, came from Republicans. So there's a lot of bad news here. First of all, they're not dealing with the problem. Secondly, Republicans are going along with the quote-unquote solution that's not really going to solve much in the long term here. And finally, the little cherry on top of this Sunday is bad math on the part of Democrats, because one of the reasons Rauner vetoed this thing is because he said what they want to do with the state income tax is raise rates 32% from 3.75% to 4.95%. And a Democrat in the legislature named Emmanuel Chris Welch says, that's not true. It's going from 3.75 to 4.95. That's only 1.2%. He has since recanted after somebody explained to him how this sort of works. So, Jim, what do you make of the Democrats basically rolling over the Republicans here, with the exception of those who are going along for some reason?
Deeply disappointing. I think one of the reasons it's so much fun to look at State Representative Emmanuel Chris Welch is it's something to laugh at in a otherwise very gloomy situation. Yes, for those, when you increase it from 3.75% to 4.9%, yes, it is 1.2% is the amount of the increase in the whole 100%. When you look at 375 to increasing from, let's say, I feel like I have to break out apples and oranges and things like that. When you increase from 3.75 to 4.95, well, actually, it's going up 32% of what it was before, and nearly increasing it by one third. I think it was Grover Norquist, who's obviously head of Americans for Tax Reform, an organization who basically believes the government should never raise taxes, that basically there's no good reason. There's always wasteful spending that can be eliminated. There's always some sort of government doing something that it should not and spending money where it should not, that you can eliminate and thus not need to raise taxes. I believe he said, if Republicans raise taxes, what is their purpose on earth? And I think Illinois state Republicans might want to start asking themselves that question. Yes, undoubtedly there's, I'm sure they have lots of needs, but really you want to go through the entire Illinois state budget and say there's not a single bit of waste, not a single bit of anything that could be eliminated, no reforms that could be enacted to reduce spending anywhere on that? Okay. I know a considerable number of people. In fact, something like this is the sort of thing that makes people come out and tell their tale. Quite a few folks have moved from Illinois in recent years, and obviously there's a lot of problems in the state, but a big one is state. People move because of taxes. People can vote with their feet, and when you find yourself in this situation, it's kind of a tax hiking death spiral. Fewer people live there, particularly the kind of people who end up paying a lot in income taxes. They start looking to relocate. They end up moving. They end up not paying taxes. So all of a sudden, you have even fewer state revenues than you expected. So you respond to it by raising taxes again, and the cycle just gets worse and worse. As much as I appreciate the Governor Rauner trying to hold the line here, but the outlook does not look good out in the land of Lincoln.
No,
land of Lincoln.
No, it does not. All right, time for a double-barreled crazy, although we're kind of referring to the second one more of a chaser. We'll see how much time we spend on that one, but it is truly crazy. Jim, before we get into this first crazy martini, we need to have a official policy here, because this refers to the wrestling video on Twitter that Trump retweeted on Sunday and has the media all apoplectic. The term for this video is spelled GIF. Are we pronouncing this GIF or JIF? What's the official policy? Because you're more tech savvy than I am.
All right. Is it a graphics interface file? Because if so, it's a GIF.
There we go. All right.
I've never understood any people say, well, the guy who invented the term calls it JIF. Well, okay, but it's not a graphics interface file. It's a graph, so yeah.
All right, policy established. Here's the Fox News version of the story. CNN was facing almost universal backlash on Wednesday after running an article on the Reddit user who made an anti-CNN wrestling-themed GIF tweeted by President Trump over the weekend and seeming to imply the network would reveal the person's identity if he reneged on an apology. Andrew Kaczynski, the senior editor and founding member of the cable network's K-File investigative team, tweeted several defenses of the article, saying parts were being quote-unquote misinterpreted. But hashtag CNN blackmail was a top trend on Twitter Wednesday morning as numerous media figures spoke out against the move. The Reddit user was behind the controversial GIF that Trump tweeted out Sunday and that showed Trump wrestling an opponent from his pre-politician days with a CNN logo plastered over his face. It was Vince McMahon, by the way. The K-File group found the creator, username Han expletive solo, by comparing information posted on Reddit to Facebook profiles. When CNN decided against publishing the user's real name, the network appeared to attach a caveat to that decision. Quote, CNN is not publishing this person's name because he is a private citizen who has issued an extensive statement of apology, showed his remorse by saying he has taken down all his offending posts, and because he said he is not going to repeat this ugly behavior on social media again. The article stated further on, quote, CNN reserves the right to publish his identity should any of that change. So Kaczynski's now got a statement from the guy saying, I've never been threatened, and on and on and on. But Jim, this does seem bizarre that our decision not to ruin your life is conditional on you making sure that you never do anything that makes us angry again.
Yeah, this is right. If I have a feeling if I met this Reddit user, I would probably not like this person.
Right.
This person has apparently posted anti-Semitic things. This person has posted racist things. This person has posted hateful things. And I don't like internet trolls. I don't like people who post things threatening, obnoxious, vile. We've all been subject to it. We've all received it. And it's a really, really unpleasant thing. And you can almost sense and understand that sense of satisfaction of, oh, all of a sudden now the idea of being publicly exposed for the sorts of things that you write and you've sent to people in the past, all of a sudden, the idea that chill down his spine, I can understand people having a certain sense of satisfaction from it. But we should take a look at what's actually happening here, which is that a extremely powerful news network, one that is kind enough to have me on every now and then, has chosen to put its resources towards exposing an anonymous online commenter who put together and doctored a little photo to make it look like Trump was beating them up. And this seems like a very strange use of those resources. Is it newsworthy when the president tweets this out? Yeah, it's newsworthy because the president did it. I don't quite understand this idea. Like, if you wanted to do a profile on here's the person who creates the memes that President Trump chooses to send out to the world, I suppose you could do that. I suppose you could say the weird thing is to say we found this person, we've contacted this person, but we're not going to tell you who this person is. We've decided it's newsworthy, but we're not going to tell you the identity. There's a lot of floating around this morning, people claiming it's a 15-year-old girl. As CNN is insisting, it is a middle-aged man. And judging from the reaction of this this Reddit user, he put up a statement saying he deeply regretted what he had done. He deeply regretted things he had posted in the past. It was a profuse and detailed apology. You can't help but suspect he did so because he realized that once CNN had contacted him through his real-life identity, Mr. Jones or whatever his name is. I don't know what his name is. That he became horrified at the thought of all the things he had posted in the past being exposed to his presumably his real life identity, his real name, being associated with that. Now, I would tell Mr. Jones or whoever this is, you know, if you're feeling that much guilt, if you're feeling that much shock and horror at the thought of being exposed, maybe you shouldn't do that. Maybe every time you have that feeling of, oh, I'm really mad at these people, you shouldn't tweet out or you shouldn't put together memes that are anti-Semitic and racist and hateful and all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't get CNN off the hook. And they really do look a little bit like mafioso enforcers when they come around and say, well, we've decided to give you a pass on this one, but we reserve the right if you post any more stuff to expose your identity or something like that. The hashtag CNN blackmail is floating around. And again, I don't quite understand the CNN thinking on this. Either the guy's identity is newsworthy or it isn't. And to run a story in which we say, we've figured out who it is, but they apologize, so we're not going to tell you. Well, then why run the story? What is the whole point of this effort here? It certainly looks like a vendetta. It certainly looks like, hey, if you write nasty things about us online, we will track you down, we will identify you, and we will attempt to expose your worst side for the whole wide world to see. And, you know, as most people have noticed, if you write, you know, intemperate things on the internet, people get fired over this sort of thing. So, you know, for whatever his sins are, and it sounds like he's posted lots of nasty stuff, CNN is not exactly covering itself in glory over this. And it just seems like a really odd way to choose how they used to allocate their, you know, Andrew Kaczynski and all those other guys. There's got to be bigger stories for these guys to chase down than the identity of people writing mean, you know, creating mean memes about CNN on the internet.
All right, let's get to our next one now. And this is a mystery that's been out there.
There's a bigger story they can cover.
For 80 years, the world has been captivated by whatever happened to Amelia Earhart. For most people, she and Fred Noonan and their effort to fly around the world crashed somewhere in the Pacific Ocean. She's thought dead as of 1937, but there were always folks out there who thought maybe they were able to survive any landing. Maybe they lived on a tropical island for the rest of their days, however long that might be. Now the History Channel is out with an hour-long special that airs on Sunday called Amelia Earhart, The Lost Evidence. And as far as we can tell, Jim, this evidence, quote-unquote, is one photo that was taken at a place called Jaluit Atoll, which is a Pacific island, and it was under Japanese control as of 1937. And there appear to be two Caucasians in the photo who are way off in the distance, one of them with their back to the camera, that we're now supposed to believe that this is Amelia Earhart, and another guy, because he has a receding hairline and a large nose, must be Fred Noonan. And so this is part of the NBC News report, because somehow they're involved with this report with the History Channel as well. And here's a little bit of the story leading up to and promoting this.
Retired Treasury Department investigator Les Kinney has spent 15 years looking for Earhart clues. While searching through formerly top secret files in the National Archives, he discovered this photograph from about 1937 marked Jaluit Atoll in the Marshall Islands.
We have a Caucasian woman with your back to the camera, sitting there, looking over towards the ship.
You think this is Amelia Earhart?
That's right.
And so, Jim, here's the convincing evidence for me. This is from the NBC News story that accompanies the video. The photo, marked Jaluit Atoll, believed to have been taken in 1937, shows a short-haired woman, potentially Earhart, on a dock with her back to the camera. And here's my favorite part. She's wearing pants, something for which Earhart was known. Jim, of all the different epitaphs you would want on your tombstone whenever that would happen, known for wearing pants would probably be not the most exciting thing.
Yeah, I am left with this. You know, look, let's be clear. Greg and I are not saying that NBC News or these producers of this documentary are lying. As Greg and I look at this kind of grainy black and white photo with this figure off in the distance, the back and somewhat turned head of the person, it could be Amelia Earhart, Greg.
It sure could.
Or it could be Bigfoot. It could be Elvis. It could be, I mean, it's not a particularly clear photo, and it's, you know, the person is very, it's off in the distance. The person is there kind of, you see like just the side of the head. Even if you blow it up and you zoom in, it's a blur. It's a, you know, and the idea of, oh, you know, the prominent jawline and nose, you know, it looks like it might be a white woman and it might be a white guy. And I, you know, the insistence that she's wearing pants, It's a big black blur. Like, again, this is one of those things that probably doesn't work that well in audio.
Right.
Go hunt it down. I'm sure you'll see it all over everywhere. Man, oh man, this is not a terribly clear photo. And I don't know about you, Greg, if I were putting together an entire documentary, look, I understand they look for some sort of hook to catch people, some sort of way to hype it, but this is not exactly a Zapruder film, right? This is not exactly, I'm fairly certain I see the Loch Ness Monster in the background.
If you listen to more of the report, they also claim, I don't know if it's just based on this photo, if it is, they're even more outlandish, that the Japanese held her captive on Saipan and she died in prison there. So this is really one amazing photo.
It's a great thriller novel idea. You know,
What gives you more comfort, though, that Amelia Earhart died crashing into the ocean, that she was trying to achieve this thing that hadn't been achieved ever before, or that she died rotting in a Japanese war prison?
Look, let's give her credit, Greg. She always liked wearing pants. It was a weird sentence, Like, there's no other woman who was wearing pants. I know it was much more traditional, and women usually wore dresses and things like that, but it looks like in this blurry photo she's wearing pants. It has to be Amelia Earhart. Okay. Now, the idea that there's been this local legend that she landed there and stuff like that, conceivable, I suppose. I'm not going to argue it's impossible, but not exactly ironclad, take it to the bank, watertight evidence. And so, maybe this will be a great documentary, maybe it won't. Let's just say that photo is kind of underwhelming. And let's face it, this is not a time where the media has been covering itself in glory over the last couple of days.
Yeah, if this was a court case, the prosecution would probably lose here. But,
they're changing the name to the Speculative History Channel.
It's better than Pawn Stars or whatever they have on there and all the other...
Or maybe they'll just add a question mark to the end. History Channel? Maybe? Are you sure?
One day somebody's going to say, do you know Jim Garrity? Jim Garrity. You know, he wears pants.
There you go. Exactly.
Oh, that
well
Jim
known
Garrity.
For wearing
yes.
pants.
Yes.
Take that, Jonah.
Welcome back, sir. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.